This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Shake them ropes. Jeff Hawkins, Chris Novemberino here on your Memorial Day weekend. Hope you guys are staying safe. Do not get into fights with people, whether or not they are wearing masks. Please just be safe on your own. Handle your business. Try and stay away from people who aren't handling them.
And please listen to what people at stores tell you to do. They work for the store.
Yes. You know, just don't be the 10% of morons out there. That's all I ask. That's Oh, but it's weird because, like, I'm a guy who likes swimming, and I'm a guy who likes water parks, as people on this thing know. And I'm supposed to be in Vegas this weekend, and I was looking forward to maybe hitting their water park that they opened 2 years ago up there. And just a weird time still, Chris.
Yeah, and now they are starting to say that it's safe to do things like go for a hike, which you kind of figured anyways, but I'm now, you know, trying to figure out how I might be able to get away here for a couple of days over a weekend and go somewhere, maybe up in Oklahoma or something, somewhere fairly remote, and just take a hike just to get out and be in nature. You can definitely still do that. And, you know, that's a good thing to do.
Yeah. So this week has sucked pretty much for those of us in the wrestling community. We're a bit of a tight-knit group, especially those of us in the internet wrestling community, the IWC, if you will.
When you say it like that, it almost sounds cool.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? We're so not. But a long time 411wrestling.com reviewer Larry Zonka passed away. Larry was very friendly with Shake Them Ropes. He and I had many a conversation in the DMs from time to time, very similar senses of humor and reference points. I wouldn't say we were friends, but we were very friendly. It was always nice to get a like from his account on a joke I made. And he bragged me occasionally when I liked a joke. And we'd sometimes test material with each other. Especially started talking to him after his, the amputation of his leg, which, he was having some issues with the insurance company getting the top-of-the-line replacement. He was so devastated when they said no. So, I mean, myself and Sean Ross Sapp and a few others were trying to get something together, and he wouldn't take our help. I respect that. I respect that. Hey, man, appreciate that. But, you know, no thanks. And I was like, okay, great. This gutted me because I love his reviews. He reviewed everything. And when I was out at night doing nightclubs and being a hack comedian everywhere, you know, if I missed a show, I could read his review. And as opposed to like Hyatt and Scott Keith, who's really were a little bit more trying to pop the reader with funny stuff, he was just more of the historical reference guy that, you know, just knew and watched everything and could refer to it.
And that is a much harder beat to do. No knock on being funny. Being funny is actually hard work if you're going to do it at a consistent level.
I wouldn't know.
I struggle with it on a daily basis. It's the only reason I know it's hard. But so what Larry did that I've always had a deep, deep admiration for, and I have, you know, some friends who are like historians of American history and that sort of thing, and they're really good at this too, and it always just razzle-dazzles me, is like a great ability to absorb just tons and tons of raw data, all statistics, you know, not as much statistics when it comes to wrestling, but he could remember all these different matches, different spots in different matches, really weigh A against B in a way where it didn't feel like Larry was just throwing ratings around. It was actually trying to more what he was currently rating in the context of the history of wrestling as best he understood it. And I have a deep admiration for someone who can do that, because I mean, you know, like, look, I'll get right into it. I watch what's in front of me on a week-to-week basis, and Hawkins knows this. I can't remember anything that happened 9 months ago in any facet of my life, let alone
that way now. I just – it was one of those things where I used to be able to remember everything, and then there just became so much wrestling. And this happened around, like, the Attitude Era especially. Like, I'll listen to, like, five-star match game or whatever, and, like, Krejci can just remember all, because it was the wrestling of his youth, so he just remembers everything from the Attitude
Era. And I can remember the stuff from my childhood, too, but, like, the stuff we're watching now, it's, like, in one ear, out the other, yes, in 6 months.
It's background noise for me. I'll put on, I'll be playing my WWE Champions on my phone or something, you know, and, you know, maybe something will pop me, maybe something won't, but if you have a few bucks that you can spare, I know it's tough times right now, go to the GoFundMe. If you need the address, let me know. I'll DM it to you. They're trying to pay off both funeral expenses and the old medical expenses from when Larry went to the hospital and was getting his rehab and stuff. And they're doing well on the thing. I thought the number was a bit high, but they seem to be getting the money. And I was just absolutely wrecked on Monday. I was trying to work at the same time. I just could not concentrate. Larry, so
this is a really tough week for great fathers, like and like losing great fathers, and Larry obviously a great father. And I mean, the other thing, like, I didn't know him at all. Like, we didn't really interact on that level, but like, I mean, I am part of the IWC, if you will, and seeing everyone commenting on Larry and on his work, I'm sure for someone who puts so much of his life's energy into his work, to see the unanimous praise for Larry's life work is such a tremendous testament to the guy. And
even guys in the industry, like Kevin Owens was retweeting his GoFundMe and putting over Larry. So, I mean, if guys are actually – see, that's the weird thing. If guys in the industry actually like your work, that's an added thing as opposed to just us geeks who criticize stuff all the time.
It means he meant something to the business. Like, you know, in some small way, you know, and that's important, man. And that's what he wanted to do when he was part of it. What a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I mean,
it's horrible that we won't have his reviews from now on to be able to cheat off of, which I have most certainly done.
No, I remember when I first started going to shows live, because I had never really been a WrestleMania guy or whatever. I asked him if he was going, and he wanted to wait until his daughter was older. Now I think he has two daughters. That's how long ago this was, but just heartbreaking. And then local to me, Shad Gaspard, half of Crime Time, got caught in a rip current last weekend. Asked for them to save his son. They did, but in the meantime, he got dragged under while they were body surfing. My servant has risk to it. I had met Shad once or twice in Vegas during the Figure Four convention. Just nice guy. But he was also Christian Rosenberg, a.k.a. Josh Tariff, has been a guest of the show. He is friends with him. He's kind of in that – he's in that mix of wrestlers who would come to wrestling/improv shows when the two intermingled. So, I mean, but you'd always see him, like, at an indie show out here occasionally, you know, behind the curtain or something, watching because he didn't want to be bothered or anything. Friends with a lot of my friends. He was also trying to get into acting and doing the auditioning thing. Had a few roles out here, so you'd see him on auditions.
He's modeling for God of War. I didn't know that. Yeah.
But, you know, you'd see him at, like, the casting houses. He'd be, you know, I'd be going into door number four. He'd be going into one where, you know, there's bigger money involved. but yeah, that story, you know, the moment when the divers call off the search, you get that pit in your stomach.
Yeah, no, that breaks your heart every time you read that headline. It's, oh man, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, divers call off search. You go, that's it, guys. Unless it's a one in a million shot, but rip currents out here, especially, they're
really dangerous. And you think vicious, you're a good swimmer, and you can be big and strong and powerful. And the thing is, with the ocean, it will drag you in. A rip current will, and human body can't overcome some of that stuff. It's rough.
They also have a GoFundMe. You know, if you can give to both, highly recommend. I mean, look, that's just, I'm also plays into a personal fear. I don't want to make this about, but I always have had a fear of drowning. So I'm always struck by these types of stories. And look, man, I mean, to give up your life for another, there's no greater sacrifice on earth. And he did that for his kid. And, you know, those of us without kids can't understand that on any level.
Yeah, I always just look on it with a deep, deep awe. I mean, I guess the best understanding of it I have comes from my own family. I don't necessarily want to get into that. But the other thing is this week in wrestling, The Vice, The Dark Side of the Ring.
Oh, having to relive. Yeah.
Yeah, the Owen stuff. And that was – that really wrecked me, because it's hard to listen to Owen's family talk about him, not because it's hard to listen to, but because it's so obvious how much he loved them, how positive their memories are of him, how much they miss him, and also how happy and proud he would have been to see his children grow up to be happy, successful adults.
Yeah, I go towards the dark part, and I just look at it and go, look at how half-assed WWE did this stunt when they knew that there were dangers involved. Look at how they treated her in the courtroom by trying to extend this out until she eventually came up with a number for them to pay. And of course, just the fake, we'll put him in the Hall of Fame type of I get angry at those types of things. If you want to hear a woman.
No, I totally get it. I just want one. It was a more natural segue to talk about great fathers or whatever.
You're right. I messed that up.
But also, I do think it's really important, these stories. It's not just that WWE or WWF at this time, same company, Vince McMahon as this manager, half-assed this stunt that didn't need to happen. That caliper, man, I saw that caliper and I had the Arthur gif, you know, the fist, man. Like, mm-hmm. It made me angry, dude. Because you see that and you know it's completely preventable. It's a wonderful thing that Max Mini was not involved in that stunt, because I think that could have been horrible. It could have been horrible for Jimmy Corderas in the ring there, too. Mm-hmm. Hearing them recap it, you're reminded again, oh, yeah, there are other people in the ring who Owen could have fallen on, and multiple people could have been killed in that situation, or injured in that situation. And it's a situation that absolutely did not need to happen, was 100% preventable, and Vince can't look himself in the mirror organizationally or on a personal level and just do the right thing. And they just want to kind of make it up by putting, there is no Hall of Fame, doing a ceremony at their annual Hall of Fame show thing. We need to stop saying put in the Hall of Fame.
We'll get one last pop, guys, for $500 in a ring.
There is no put. There is no putting. There's a show. You go and you appear at the show, or you don't appear at the show, and they play a little presentation, yeah. And that's it. But there's no – like, I can't go and visit the Hall of Fame this year. There's no place to go to. And it would be lame if you could, too. It'd be like a lame as well. Like, they'd slap that thing together.
Yeah, but if you want to hear – I'm going to plug audio for another site. Listen to the free interview that Dave Meltzer and Jim Valley did with Martha Hart. And that is a woman with a good head on her shoulders. She's dealt with this, but she's also used it for good. She has that Owen Hart Foundation. What she does with it is awesome. It's very plug heavy about the Owen Hart Foundation. I'm going to warn you about that. And it sounds like she's shilling hard, but you can tell that it means the world to her.
Well, and where else is she going to get a platform? I would say this, guys, don't begrudge her for doing that, because she has an opportunity this week to take advantage of her exposure, and she ought to be doing that. It's not quote-unquote shilling. This is what she's doing, and she's doing it in honor of Owen. So if you're a fan of Owen Hart.
She went to Cambridge after this, and she's now putting a kid through Cambridge.
They're also successful and happy, and it's the damnedest shame that Owen's not there to be part of that, because that's where his heart was.
So on to wrestling. If there's a good segue to it, I don't know what it is, so we'll just
go on to wrestling.
Moments after we went off the air last week after recording this, it turns out that Drew Gulak had wrestled his last match with WWE after doing the Intercontinental match on Friday against Daniel Bryan that we really liked. It turns out they had done contract negotiations, and I believe Drew was on his NXT 205 Live deal still, asked for more money, and WWE said no thank you, and Drew said, fine, I'm out of here, which... perfectly acceptable to me. Do that. Because, look, I mean, some people like the safety of the paycheck. Some people like the art. I think Drew Gulak's the latter. I don't know if he's the mystery guy at this Double or Nothing or not. I tend to think it's going to be Zack Ryder, whatever name he's going to be using. But I would not be surprised. But at the same time, there's some rumors that he and Cody don't get along due to an incident involved. But, the legacy of Drew Gulak to me in WWE is a guy who outkicked his coverage, because when I watched him on the indies, you know, you watch the Grapple F matches with Tim Thatcher, and you know, he's a very skilled wrestler, you know, a little light on the charisma, and then you'd see, Catch Point, and you know, okay, this is a fun little gimmick here. But then he gets into sports entertainment world, and all of a sudden, he's that PowerPoint gimmick, the campaign, the politician to make a better 205 live.
The second he got the news from the 1980s music
as
intro, it was a whole new day for this guy. And he, when he became the head of 205 and he was kind of the leader of that faction, we got to see him really leading a faction, but then we got to see the comedic side. And that actually were pretty good. And there were some really fun things too, like a Tanahashi reference in one of those slideshows and a Tiger Mask reference in one of those slideshows. Like, Gulak figured out how to be funny. It's who he always reminded me of in some ways is Dean Malenko. But when Dean Malenko came to WWE, they goofed him up, you know, by making him a ladies' man or whatever. It's like Drew Gulak actually got the weird charisma injection and like all the weird WWE flavoring, but with him it actually took, because like normally they overdo it, and with Drew Gulak you can only quote unquote overdo it with this guy so much.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny when they finally put him on the main roster, you knew it was just to lose to big guys, so you know, he'd do the cheap heel thing and then get beaten like 30 seconds. But once he got over to SmackDown and part of the Daniel Bryan Vanity Federation.
And the problem with that federation is it kind of fell apart because you don't have Sami Zayn there either.
Right, a little bit. But, man, I was loving him in this role. I love that the fact that he's a competitor and they were enemies. And then once he started training them, even though they had to compete against each other, they were still friends. It was just a fantastic little storyline they were doing there.
Yeah, it was Rocky and Apollo. And like in the Rocky III storyline where, you know, Apollo's giving him the eye of the tiger.
Hey, woman. Sorry. I'll go to my Clever Lang, who's a very underrated villain. But yeah, no, I'm interested to see what happens with him. He could do New Japan, Best of the Super Juniors. ROH is out there. TNA, maybe. AEW, I just don't know. I just don't. It wouldn't shock me. But AEW is getting a little roster heavy, even though nobody seems to be coming in for the tapings. But you look at their roster, it's bigger than you think.
Yeah, they have a big roster. They just, I mean, with AEW, they have a lot of guys who are all on the same level right now.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like there's real rankings, and you know, the top guys don't feel that far elevated above the lowest guys, especially like once you get into the tag division or whatever. Yeah, the fact that Kazarian and Scorpio Sky can get a world title shot and that feels plausible in AEW's universe kind of speaks to a planing of everybody, you know?
Yeah, speaking of AEW, I was trying to decide which story I wanted to go with. Britt Baker, torn ACL, it looks like, due to that spot with Statlander and Nyla Rose, and you're just like...
Good Lord.
This is someone who just got the character going, and this kills her momentum.
More importantly, she is the real anchor charismatically of this division.
Yes.
And I don't have faith in Nyla Rose to carry this for any length of time. She is a better version of Nia Jax, but it's not enough. It's not enough. And Statlander's just lacking.
Raw.
Yeah,
we'll go with Raw and be generous.
Yeah.
I love Sheeta. I like Riho. I just...
Sheeta's the only one who's a real keeper to me, out of all of the ones that we've talked about, though.
Yeah, I would agree there. I'm I don't know. This women's division frustrates me, and apparently Tony Khan has taken over the reins of it from Kenny, and now this is happening, and it's really showing that they should have signed some of these people they were using at this time last year for that Battle Royal, because you had Mercedes Martinez and Nicole Savoy and others out there, and they're off the table now. So it's
Mercedes Martinez would be over there right now and be an easy top level championship contender type of person, either working as underdog or working as the top heel.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a little frustrating. Are you watching Double or Nothing this weekend?
Yeah, I'll get around to it. Sure.
I think so. I'm probably gonna end up watching live. I'm down on it more than most people. I just thought this go home show was a nothing show.
Yeah, this is a total nothing go home show. This is a WWE level go home show, and this is like a main roster level go home show, and the numbers just barely outperformed NXT.
Yeah, and. I remember, well, total viewers said, well, the demo is what's important, Jeff. I'm like, that's fine, but the fact is both these products are, you know, usually losing to Guy Fieri's grocery games and stuff.
Yeah, the overall number has to kick in, right? The question I asked you, and I think getting increasingly important when we're looking at these numbers, is what is the lead-in doing on USA and on TNT, and how much of this is just – I'm leaving the channel on people at this point.
Yeah, because USA, the lead-in is either Chicago PD or Law & Order, you know, SVU, PT, SXF, whatever, you know. And then on TNT, it's a movie that they play 30 times over the week.
Yeah, and I want to see what, like, the actual lead-in migration is and like, what we're really able to tease out. But really more importantly than all of that is, you know, I see people talking about one property being the hot property and one property not being the hot property. The numbers keep going down, y'all. We started with 3 million. We're under 1.5 million. People are fighting about being the tallest short person. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't a grand accomplishment that is occurring here.
Well, AEW has, to me, a bigger problem, and that is there's no heat in any of these programs, really.
Brody Lee stuff is, I mean, there
that's
are...
That's not main event level. That's not a main event level.
There are wrestling fans who don't get that gimmick either. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. Obviously, he's doing a Vince McMahon gimmick. But there are casuals who will watch that, and they don't know enough about Vince McMahon, the actual person, to know what Mr. Brody Lee is even lancing at here. Because if you watch WWE television, Mr. McMahon has not been an on-screen character with any regularity in several years now.
Yeah, it's the inside joke type stuff that everybody's kind of playing into. And then the other big match is that Stadium Stampede or Stadium Survival? I've got the alliteration on it. But when you're going into Blood and Guts, then, you know, originally when it was supposed to be in New Jersey, I believe, it felt like the Inner Circle and the Elite was a hot feud. And now it's a cutesy, you know, you have this Damascus character involved. You have the bubbly bunch with your heels doing comedy videos and stuff, it just doesn't feel like there should be a blood and guts type of, you know, of a blood feud. And I'm not moved by a lot of it. The Jake Arn stuff was okay.
Okay, though. Yeah. Not great. Like, when they're like, everyone wanted to see Jake and Arn go at it. Like, I'm like, that may have been true. I don't know that that's true in 2020. Yeah, and even Murder Hawk Monster, Lance Archer, the cool badassery that initial vignette where he was just beating up random people, like, you know, out in the woods or whatever, like, that was cool. Whatever mystique he once had with that, it's gone, because he comes out and he just, like, throws, like, a random NPC out onto the entrance. Like, it's part of his entrance now. It's not randomly brutal. It's actually something one can account for, and it's almost done to the point of comedy. And yeah, it takes away from the mystique of Lance Archer. I still chuckle every time I see that damn truck, though. Man, they edited that thing to look so cool, Jeff.
I mean, the one thing on AEW that I really like, I loved the Orange Cassidy Phoenix match. I thought that was great, but boy, that post-match where everybody just decided to cosplay Miz in terms of catching people who were diving, that was a bit dangerous, but...
I thought it was a tribute to Super Kolo.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it'll probably be a fun show. It's still not... I gotta agree with the people who are going, man, I'm missing crowds at this point. Like, I mean, good crowds, not just a couple.
Yeah, I don't know. The crowds are missing this, though. Yeah, and I think that is going to be the problem here. And I mean, even with the Orange Cassidy, you're right, dude. Orange Cassidy and Phoenix was a really good Orange Cassidy match. But the Orange Cassidy gimmick has like an obvious shelf life.
No, but I mean, in terms of the work, though, he's
no, the really work. Great. No, he's awesome. He's a
great Ricky Morton type babyface and just dies when he gets killed.
He also doesn't need to be part of the best friends anymore. Like, yes, like, he needs to float around and do other things. And I'm with you. He's totally a Ricky Morton. He's great in a tag team. He needs to be in a tag team. He needs to be the guy getting heat, or he needs to be the hot tag. Kind of conversely, you have, like, you could do another thing where you have the big guy. That's the guy who gets all the heat on him. And then it's up to Orange Cassidy to come in and save the day, if you want to go comedy with it and invert sort of expectations. No, he's an interesting guy, but I also need more layers than what they're giving me at this point, too, with them.
Yeah, there's a dearth of quality on WWE, so it's weird. Because I was thinking while you're talking, it's like, there's only three things on any show across the platforms that I liked, and one of them happened tonight before we went to air. So we're going to...
You want to start there? We can start there.
We're pivoting over to the WWE and the main roster. Raw was 3 hours with a half hour worth of wrestling and 2.5 hours worth of just junk. Junk, Chris. I
did fall asleep for about an hour. Some. I watched this show live, and that was a mistake, because during one of those commercial breaks, I went to sleep and didn't come back. Until
we were cracking jokes throughout. Some of yes. that cannot be repeated here because they're in bad taste.
Our DM threads are getting cheeky these days.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of want to make the joke, but I don't want to because I'm afraid somebody's going to get offended by it after I...
No. Then discretion is the better part of valor.
You are correct. But, man, we had axe-throwing competitions. The one interesting thing was I actually liked the execution of Los Ingobernables Orlando turning on Austin Theory, and then Austin Theory not automatically becoming a babyface, but later joining with Seth Rollins.
No, it parallels what happened with Buddy Murphy. Mm-hmm. No, I like this. I actually thought that this was really cool. And I thought it was going really well right up until they got ham-handed and beat you over the head with what Joe Lanza refers to as the subtlety hammer, with the fact that Buddy Murphy hates Austin Theory. I feel like the first week, it should have been like, the more the merrier. And Buddy Murphy and Austin Theory should have had great synergy. And I actually think initially they should have really good – it's not going to work because we've already got like three or four beats ahead of the story. But for the first several weeks, I would have had Rowan having Murphy and Theory working like a well-oiled machine. And then Murphy starts getting mad at Austin Theory because
you're exactly right. This is like a one-year program, and they're going to truncate it into 3 weeks. And it should be, you know, it should be at first. Austin's a great part of the team. He's doing well. He and Murphy are getting wins. You know, everybody's getting singles wins. Everybody's helping each other. And, you know, and then, you know, maybe in the tag team, Austin starts getting a little bit flashy. You know, maybe he loses a match because he's flashy, or maybe he's just trying to show off or something like that. And then
one
eventually,
of them says, we're better than the Shield. And that's what gets the ire of Seth Rollins.
Yeah, well, but what I was thinking is, you know, eventually, because they're winning so much, there's an opportunity singles-wise. And Murphy loses, but maybe Austin Theory gets the next opportunity and he wins, and that causes the seeds of jealousy, like for maybe the U.S. title or whatever. And then you do that, and then you start, you know, and then you start trying to curry favor with Seth, and then Seth has to choose or something to that effect, but it feels like they're going to rush this, and this could go on for a long time.
It won't feel like they're going to rush this. When you've gotten to the point where Murphy's already registering palpable contempt, we've already skipped so much of the interesting setup section of the story.
Yeah, we've skipped the prologue and immediately gone to the climax of the story.
Which is where all the fun is. All the fun is in the setup, because the ending is the ending. The team splits up. We understand that. The fun part is how we get there. The joy is in the journey, not in the finishing. We need narrative satisfaction.
Speaking of which, credit where credit is due, because they are doing that with this Sasha and Bayley story. Number one, this match was such a joy to me. I loved Bayley and Charlotte Flair. I believe it was Sean Ross Sapp who really hit it home. These empty arenas, the one person it has helped most of all is Bayley, because her banter in the ring and with Michael Cole is absolutely fantastic. Charlotte, who knows if she's a babyface or heel at any given time, because they're
but it works
cheating.
In this match. It actually works better that it's essentially a heel versus heel match with baby trending towards babyface-ish tendencies. But the story of the match here is that Bayley is going to out heel the heel, so Charlotte's still working kind of heelish, and Bayley, now that she's gone through this Aunt Pam phase, she's now at this point where she knows how to use the ropes and stuff that the old Bayley didn't know. So it's a form of maturation for this Bayley. Like, this was a way more cerebral television match for WWE than they even do in terms of narrative wise on their pay-per-views. Like, there's a lot going on in this match,
and I'll add some more layers to it. Before the match, our girl Aunt Pam tells her sassy friend Sasha, I don't want your help because I think I can beat Charlotte on my own. And of course, there's that lingering jealousy, you know, after last week with Charlotte.
And that's all babyface-ish too.
Yeah. And Charlotte's calling out Sasha during the match and Sasha doesn't come out, which can be taken both ways. It can be taken as Sasha's not going to help Bayley, but it can also be taken as Sasha's really friends with Bayley. And is doing exactly what she said and is not going to fall for the cheap parlor tricks of Charlotte here. It was intelligent heel work.
Charlotte already has a deal going with Sasha, and we just don't know it yet.
Oh, good Lord. I didn't even ponder that, but that I don't know if that would work, but I'll take it. But, you know, these characters are acting intelligently, and the match was great. It's still weird to me to watch Bayley as a heel, but the thing that she does so well to me is she sells and bumps for people. Like, she's just a ragdoll in there for Charlotte this week. She was like that with Tamina in that match. And you didn't see that when she was a baby face for the most part, because she was trying to get sympathy. So she'd always kind of be playing to the crowd with the hangdog look, as opposed to now where she's just getting thrown all over the place and just taking wild bumps. You are right. She is maturing into this character before our eyes.
And it gives wrinkles to her when she becomes a baby face again, because now she is wizened, she's more worldly, she knows how to cheat. And that was the story of this match. She's working as the underdog baby face heel against Charlotte, who is the overdog heel baby face. It's a weird match, but it makes tons of sense, and it's very, very satisfying in terms of the narrative.
We need to talk a bit about Charlotte. This is a perfect time.
Sure.
Chris, she is on all three shows. This is overkill. This is absolute overkill of Charlotte. And I, look, don't get me wrong.
The people love Charlotte. They want more Charlotte. You hear that all the time.
It feels almost like panic on Vince's part that our biggest star, Becky Lynch, is off the shelf. I need to create a new star. So I'm going to Roman Reigns Charlotte on every show. I'm going to Poochie Charlotte on every show. If Charlotte's not on the screen, we're talking about Charlotte, because she was on NXT doing a run-in this week. She was on Friday Night SmackDown. She's going to be in a number one contenders match for the Raw Women's title. I think Charlotte is talented as hell athletically. I think her character suffers because she's far too powerful. And there's no character development there. But I swear it seems like almost they're going to have her go through all three rosters to build her and make her the main star. And I just think, look, it happened with Becky. This is how Becky became a babyface. Is we wanted Charlotte to be this big, strong baby face to take on Ronda Rousey, and the crowd caught on to it. And we're going to get there again. If she wins this number one contenders match for any reason, I don't think she is, because Nia Jax is involved, and she possibly wins the Raw Women's title while, you know, maybe dropping the NXT title and not being involved in the fall. It's too much.
Yeah, I think they've overheated her. It'll be really interesting to see how she's received when we get back in front of crowds. Because I think the other big problem with Charlotte, especially with the way that they want to use her so heavily, is that her character is boring as hell.
It's an absolute
system
character. She does the pose. She has the peacocking. She says the woo.
She's not Charlotte. Ashley is not Charlotte. Ashley is playing Charlotte, and there is no, I couldn't just like have an NBA game on with Charlotte in the room and Charlotte's being Charlotte, because Ashley wouldn't know what Charlotte says just eating a ham sandwich. Ashley wouldn't know what Charlotte says just watching the game. And Ric Flair could be Ric Flair doing anything. Being on a roller coaster, going to a mortuary. Like, Ric Flair could be Ric Flair anywhere if you wanted to be.
I don't know if they do communications classes anymore on the main roster. I know they used to. But if I'm running an acting workshop of any kind, I really would like at this point to bring up Charlotte and go, you can't use a single catchphrase that you normally use. Cut me a promo that'll bring me into the building about either Sasha or Bailey, because those are her friends, so that'd be the easiest to do it. And I'd like to see what happens, because I'd really like to see this character do something except corporate WWE speak, because it's an interesting, like, could she be a female Ric Flair? And the titles aren't going to get her there. The titles will get her, you know, like we said, the WWE Hall of Fame ring and stuff. And I know promos aren't big with Vince, that he likes doing exposition-y dialogue. But, Mike, I just want to see Charlotte cut a money promo and see if she could do it.
I just want her to embody something more than, like, a female Ric Flair cover band.
Yeah.
Like right now, it's kind of like watching – this is a really good band, too. Like, have you seen Zeppelella? The all-female tribute band.
Yes, I love that version of
Dude, no, they're awesome. They're a fantastic band. Go and check them out if you never checked them out. It's not like a knockoff, but, like, you know, Led Zeppelin's Led Zeppelin, right? And Charlotte is an awesome, awesome performer. The other knock, though, on her is that, like, I don't feel like Charlotte's matches with like, tonight was a good one where it felt like they were, like, having a match. But sometimes it feels like Charlotte's just kind of, like, rushing through spots, and there's no real story to that. But that's a bigger WWE problem, too.
I also think – I think I wanted her to be upset about getting beat rather than, ha-ha, you got me. I don't know that yet because I don't
– I could go back and forth on that, but I feel like the you got me, okay, I see how it is. Because, like, she's the daughter of the dirtiest player in the game. Game, yeah. Respect game.
Well, do you want her to go hard then into the – maybe she's angry for a second, but then she, you know, maybe applauds the treachery type of thing? Like, you know, tipping the cap to the person who outsmarted her as opposed to just kind of laughing to herself? I just don't know because, like,
I don't know
that NXT and she'll be a heel. Here she's kind of a trickster baby face, which is so weird.
The bigger problem is the inconsistent characterization, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is she a baby face heel, a heel baby face? But, like, she's sitting in this weird tweenery status and it's uncommon, like, I can't think of an analogy, to have someone this heavily exposed and occupying true gray neutral right now while being the top person.
Yeah, I just don't know. She's a presence, and it's an ongoing presence.
But it's not like a hot... hot gray neutral presence that's like really overbearing and really feels like a cloud over everything right now. It's just that she's on everything.
Yeah, she's gonna, you know, you're gonna hear the music, she's gonna do the woo, she's gonna do the spin, you know, she's gonna take it off, she's gonna talk down to everybody, and she's gonna say, woo, I'm the queen.
The theme song's even a problem. I think she needs to get past having...
The theme song.
I liked the theme song initially. But that musical cue immediately makes you compare her to Rick, whether you're thinking about it consciously or not. And every time she underdelivers, you're thinking about it as she leaves the ring because you hear the music again.
Let me get pantsuit Charlotte. Like Ric Flair and the Michaels of Kansas City. You know, the custom-made suits. Give me custom-made Charlotte.
Right, right. And she really does need to have, a horsewomen faction for some length of time, too. You know what I mean? Like part of what made Flair Flair is, you know, having the four horsemen.
Yeah, and having guys to play off of. And even, I mean, he's the type of guy that would have a gang of jerks. So, yeah, I kind of agree. She kind of had that thing going, but it was so – you remember when they first made Bayley the secret partner of Sasha at Battleground? I think it was 2017, I want to say. And they
were covered. I don't remember anything from like 9 months ago.
But Dana Brooke was kind of playing mini me Charlotte Flair because Emma had been cut.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And that's how they play the gangs, though. We know how they do stables. It's a couple of flunkies and the person that they think is important.
That gets to the other problem. Like, why is Charlotte going to have a hard time getting to Flair-ish statuses? It's because of that presentation issue. And that's not just a problem on the women's side. It's more of a problem on the women's side because of historical issues presenting the women on the product. But you see it with Drew McIntyre, too. I mean, there's a lot of analogies between Charlotte and Drew's presentation or, like, the inability to really kind of put it all together with these people.
Yeah. It's almost like they're building them in a marketing lab as opposed to as a pro wrestler sometimes. The other thing that drew my attention that I thought was really good, I loved that Drake Maverick-Kushida match. Drake Maverick is great.
I love that Drake Maverick promo, too.
Yes.
To lead in. Oh, man. That got me. Which is dumb because I it's WWE, but like it was good. He's really good, and like that's a unique skill, and he's got it.
Chris, they are playing this tune. I mean, given that NXT to me has become really sports entertainment with yellow ropes now, as opposed to a wrestling federation that it used to be.
Yeah, right. No, and I don't think that's going to change when they get back in front of a crowd or anything either. This is just the Wednesday sports entertainment brand.
They are playing this tune so, so well. And it's going to be an absolute gut punch when he doesn't win this triple threat. But if he's really fired after this triple threat, what was the point of pulling our heartstrings this entire time? That's what I don't get.
So I think he is going to make it to the finals. And then he's going to lose because Ehel Del Fantasma is going to unveil
the screw him.
Yeah. But the other way I do see this play, or this could play out, is that Jake Atlas is totally working it and like
becomes
a complete savage creep on Drake Maverick during that match, and he's the actual heel in that match. It's not Kushida, it's not Drake Maverick, it's Atlas, and Atlas is going to snap. But Maverick still finds a way to win the match.
Yeah, that's interesting. I thought it'd be great if, you know, you had the moral conflict with Jake Atlas. Even though it's been kind of terribly built. There's a story there that's good. They just didn't find it with Jake Atlas rooting for Drake Maverick and absolutely being crushed that he has to be the guy to beat him. But there's going to be that moment, kind of like the Otis Braun thing from last week, where it's like you can either win and go on to this title thing, or you can be nice and not take advantage of this situation right now. And everything to me says that you should have Jake Atlas take advantage of that and crush the guy he was actually rooting for's dreams. But at the same time, you also have this story in the other group, where El Hijo del Fantasma is obviously the Kaiser Soze of the masked crew.
Oh, yeah, they totally hit you over the head with that.
And you got to turn him at some point, but do you turn him against Jake Atlas, who's already been turned heel? So I think it's interesting, but
Wait, what if, twist upon twist, the real leader
is Jake Atlas?
Yes.
Love that. I want that now. That's almost...
Hijo del Fantasma's the lieutenant. The real leader's Jake Atlas.
Oh, so they're in cahoots. I was thinking maybe Fantasma's the patsy.
Oh, the entire time. He's just not quite competent. He's really been trying this whole time.
He's really been trying this whole time. And Jake Atlas's gang runs away at the first type of trouble to try and frame him.
Either one of these is really good.
Yeah. God. Here we are fantasy booking, and I hate fantasy booking, but it's such a cool little story to play with, because they run into these interesting little twists they could do. Like the Tucker story. God, you know, Tucker's going to be the guy they trade over to Raw for AJ Styles. You can just see that happening. But his part in this Otis Mandy thing, you're just going, God, they could do so many cool things with this. And they've stumbled upon something. And then the writer, not necessarily the writer's room, but the ideas start to filter through the guy who has to make the call. And then you just go, he's just going to go back and do what he likes to do.
And then you remember that one of the foils in this is Dolph Ziggler and Sonya Deville, who are just the most slapdash foils for Mandy and Otis.
Yeah, but I love Sonya Deville. I do.
She's great, but I just don't think that there's any value added to this. And I mean, you really heard that with Cole on commentary this week.
Hold on. You know what's going to happen in this triple threat, don't you?
No, tell me.
Jake's going to try and screw Drake. Drake's going to try and win, then Kushida's going to beat them both somehow.
I still think it's Drake who's getting to the finals and then getting screwed over by Hijo del Fantasma.
But we'll
see. So going back to the commentary for this, they were trying to describe this feud And Michael Cole goes, this feud's got everything, and proceeds to rattle off seven different adjectives, four of which are synonyms for one another.
Someone had their thesaurus out.
Yeah, no, it's like bitterness, anger, contempt, jealousy, pettiness, cruelty. I'm like, oh, is that everything? Is that all of the things?
The only thing that would have made that better is bitterness, pettiness, cruelty, turn page.
Armbar.
Armbar. Yeah, No, there wasn't a lot on SmackDown other than that Bayley Charlotte match that I really, really liked. I mean, their storytelling there for the Jeff Hardy one last run type thing, but
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, then we get to the match with Sheamus, and it's like, you know, same old Sheamus. Yeah, I will say
he's pretty much doing the same stuff too.
And right. No, and it's fine. Like Sheamus, when he beeled Hardy onto the table, that looked great. I was thinking watching the match, it's like these guys both look really great, and it's amazing, you know, that they're still going at 40 and still turning in a pretty good performance, but there's just no intrigue whatsoever in the Sheamus heel character for me. And one last run, Jeff Hardy is okay, I suppose, but I mean, if you're a fan of Jeff Hardy at any level of intensity, you'd really rather just see him over in AEW with Matt.
Yeah, I just it's weird to do the last gunfighter story or the aging gunfighter story, but have them still do all the tricks they did when they were the young gunfighter.
Yeah, his match style was the exact same Jeff Hardy match style.
Right.
He's still, you know, he's still doing all the hits. And it's great that he can still do them. I mean, like, I was watching him do the Whisper of the Wind, and I'm just like, God, I wouldn't want to do one of those, let alone still be doing them at his age. It's awesome. He can still really go, and that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But, the aged thing, where you're rooting for the aged guy, is even a little bit harder when he's wearing all the face paint and stuff. You don't see the lines and the wrinkles and stuff. He looks kind of ageless.
Have him do the Will-O-The-Wisp occasionally, so it's a big deal when he does. Oh, at his age, he can still do that. But again, they want you to always be the same character you always were, and we can't evolve or anything, so it just becomes, all right, we got Jeff Hardy and Sheamus here doing stuff.
Well, and Hardy needs to spice it up too. I mean, like, what we're talking about in terms of adjustment is like less like high impact moves, and even like he doesn't need to do submissions. He's a babyface. I mean, it's, you know, clotheslines, punches, kicks, a little bit of, you know, throwing some knees, working in the corner a little bit more, staying on the ground a little bit more, staying on your feet a little bit more. And making sure when you're doing something like the Will of the Wisp, like that could be the 1-2-3. I do think, you know, protecting some of the big, cool, high-flying moves, I think, is important.
Chris, give me 15 minutes on this Shotzi Blackheart promo.
She's the worst, Jeff. She's the worst. This is the worst. It's horrible. My name is Shotzi Blackheart. I like riding a tank. You probably go to work in an Uber. Maybe you got a car and a car payment. I don't. You know why? Because I already paid off my tank, which I am taking anywhere I want to go. Sometimes cops show up, and they try to stop me in my tank, which I ride around in. But you know what? I've got a howitzer on this thing. So I blow it up, and then I drive off Grand Theft Auto style and find one of those stars underneath the bridge to get my star rating count down. No, dude, it's like the worst promo in the world. It was grating.
Here's a name. Show the tank. Here's another name. Show the tank.
You know who I look up to? I look up to my dad. Like, somehow you managed to take that and become annoying. Like, especially like the lead off of this episode. Obviously, we like dads.
When you do these things, you have to come in and, okay, even if you tape a whole lot of footage, after that, when you're cutting it or whatever, go, okay, what is the point of the story that I'm telling right now? And why are people watching this?
Who is this person? Other than like if you've never seen Tank Girl before, like I've seen Tank Girl, Hawkins, you've seen Tank Girl, right?
95, yeah.
Yeah, and right, 1995, 25 years ago.
Lori Petty's magnum opus.
Yeah, we're going back here. So if you've never seen Tank Girl, or you're not familiar with Tank Girl, what are you supposed to get out of Shotzi Blackheart? What does she do? Why does she do it? Did her dad give her the tank? Like, what is going on here?
You know who hasn't seen Tank Girl? Anybody under the age of 35.
Yeah, like, unless it's making some Zoomer, you know, 20-something resurgence that I'm not aware of here, it occupies punk rock culture. It occupies the same subcultures that it's always occupied, punk rock, alt stuff, and in a very niche sort of way, because it's a very sort of niche movie.
Yeah, NXT was a bit of a grind for me this week because I just Mara was being heavy in the corporate speak, and I just couldn't. We're on week two of Karrion Kross and Scarlett's act. It seems to have evolved away from lip syncing. I think that's mostly a positive. We're still doing 50 Shades of Black vampire stuff. There's a little lip syncing in there here and there. How is this working for you?
I mean, it's fine. Karrion Kross does not have the oomph. Goldberg oomph thing that he needs to be a real, oh, wow, where did this come from sort of thing. And I think Scarlett's the bigger star of the two of them.
Yeah, I you know how this company can be with couples.
Jeff, the man's first name is Vulture with a yeah. K. Mm-hmm. And so he's either going to be Karrion, which is Vulture at some point, or he's going to be Kross, which are total lower mid-card heel names in this company.
Right. Yeah, I didn't think very much of the Tommaso Ciampa promo. It really didn't put, I mean, it kind of put over him almost dismissing the entire gimmick type of thing. You know,
which is ridiculous because it's like everything's supposed to be moving through Johnny and Candace. And like when you watch the rest of the show, I mean, they're moving a lot of stuff through Johnny and Candace. I thought Tommaso's character.
Welcome to NXT. Here's a
right.
Gig.
Yeah. Him doing that, I was like, this actually lowers.
It's not him.
That's right.
Not
it's also not him. Yeah. It's not his character.
We don't watch Tommaso Ciampa to, you know, we don't watch him for subtlety. We watch him because he's an angry dude who kills people.
And he doesn't just let stuff go.
Yeah, he's not the type of guy to forgive and forget. I mean, if Gargano had done this during the height of their feud, when Ciampa's a heel or a babyface, he comes down with that crutch and whacks him over the head in the middle of whatever match he chooses. There's no foreplay here.
At bare minimum, if he's going to walk away for the feud for now, what he should do is essentially just dangle out there, I'll be back to deal with this at some point. And you don't know where, you don't know when. And at some point, Johnny's having a match and the finish can be Tommaso Ciampa comes out and just whacks the hell out of him with a crutch. And that's how Johnny loses the match at an important time.
It looks like we have Gargano and Candace pivoting over to Mia Yim and Keith Lee. I'm still... I have no idea what they want to do with Santana Garrett in this company. She checks all the boxes for them. And now she's gone from Wonder Woman cosplay to Zatanna cosplay, which is interesting, I guess. But so Johnny and Candace are smaller heels going up against bigger baby faces. Okay.
Yeah. And I think they're going to win because this is going to be the parlay for Johnny to get his title match against Keith Lee.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not there. I think Keith Lee has been cooled down since having this title. I thought the just having him go over and over again with Dijakovic was, you know, it became almost rote. And then the Damian Priest character, there wasn't a lot to that feud either. So
it's really uninspired. And I, you know, the shame is that I think that there's actually an interesting story going back to the thing that we liked with Daniel Bryan and Drew Gulak. I think Mia Yim and Keith Lee as training partners is actually kind of fun. Like, they're just friends.
And no, they're a real-life couple.
Oh, they're a real-life couple. But I would, on screen, I'd just have them be training partners.
Okay, that's fine, too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like, go, like, and it's just to mix it up here, and it's, like, platonic. And, like, they motivate each other, whereas Johnny and Candace are, like, the psycho couple.
Why can't you do anything right? You burn the meatloaf and now you don't get the tag.
Yeah, there's a lot. Like, I don't know. There's good stuff there.
There's something there.
They haven't found it yet, and I don't really see how Tommaso Ciampa fits into this NXT. But the real problem is that week to week feels increasingly like they're writing this shit. I'm sorry, this stuff week to week. Like, they're not, it doesn't feel like the NXT of 2 years ago where stuff was clearly booked from pay-per-view to pay-per-view.
Couple minor matches. If you have any thoughts on Birch and Lorcan against Ever-Rise, no real thoughts here.
No real thoughts. I mean, I like that Ever-Rise is getting a little bit more time, a little bit more exposure. This is one of those matches where Moro was really going, like, heavy on the Moroisms. I just need him to call the match. I sort of feel like he's been encouraged to do more of the pop culture references, and I'd rather him just, like, ease off of that and just call holds. But I think he thinks that the jokes are safer.
There was a moment, I can't remember if it's at the very beginning or during this match, where he's doing that string of references. You can almost hear a second where Beth is just going, how in the F am I supposed to follow that with anything?
The Little Richard reference where the only thing she could come up with was, I bet you can't say wop bop a loo bop a wop bam wow three times. And, like, then there's just this big pregnant pause on commentary. And Morrow's sitting there and he goes, a wop bop a loo bop a wop bam wow. And then we get into the next match.
Roderick Strong and Dexter Lumis.
Dexter Lumis's character is weird. The music, I don't know why it's taking me this long. It's just like a knockoff of Stranger Things' theme, right?
Yeah. Can I be the guy that is actually kind of interested in Dexter Lumis?
Give me the intrigue. I know we're not supposed to fantasy book. Sell me on Dexter Lumis.
I can't sell you on it.
No, you have to. I demand to
go. I can't. No, I'm not. No,
I want to go. I want you to. I want to go.
He's very good on the acting part of it. I'm not saying his ring work is. You know, is that NXT from a couple years ago worthy? But in terms of character work, that stroking the hair thing, you know, while blood is trickling down his throat, and he's just not giving an inch. The weird partnership with him and Velveteen Dream, who is still on TV, to much of our shocks. I don't know. There's something working for me about this, even though I think he should be a bodyguard character, pure and simple. But the creepy stalker character who is also playing bodyguard for Velveteen Dream is kind of weird. The worst sin in that match was when Velveteen Dream came off the top turnbuckle and there's the obvious cut.
That cut when he
jumped onto a crash pad and then they reshot it from a different angle.
Oh yeah, that was really bad.
It's the Elias falling off of the tower spot.
The Elias falling off of the tower spot was better. I thought that they did a better job with that than this. Like this, it felt like Velveteen Dream was just standing and just like faked an elbow drop from standing position. They tried to edit it together. So I'll give you this. I think that all of the accidental blood in the Lumis matches have given the matches like some much needed, pun intended, juice. And I think it helps his character a lot. I think the pairing with Velveteen Dream beyond the outside of the ring stuff, even if that wasn't going on, it's a weird pairing. It wouldn't have been my first choice. You know what actually would be more fun? You know what would be a more fun pairing here would be Tommaso Ciampa and Dexter Loomis.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah.
Right? And is Loomis trying to be the Psycho Killer's friend? Is he not the friend? Are they going to hit it off and become a really good tag team? Can Tommaso Ciampa really trust this guy? Like, I just think that that's a more interesting character pairing than Velveteen Dream, who, like, one of the problems with this character is it doesn't really have a natural foil.
He doesn't have an ethos, so you can't do a foil for him.
Right, yeah. It's like, it, you know, when you try to juxtapose it to the Undisputed Era, it's not particularly interesting, like, his character, and regardless of how you feel about him. Just, like, what's the struggle, right? Like, there's no... that does seem like a little fun wrinkle or whatever. And like, if he goes up against Johnny Gargano, what's the interesting wrinkle / struggle with him and Candace and Johnny? Like, he's trying to steal Candace as the baby face when Johnny and Candace are supposed to be the super tight psycho couple. Like, that doesn't really make sense.
When he was a heel, it was, look, I'm eccentric, but I'm also a tough guy and I'm coming after you. He was kind of doing the dandy type thing. Now as a baby face, it's crowd service for the 80s spots with Savage and Rude. And that's, but it's not an ethos.
And that's actually kind of fun in a match sometimes, but
you can't book you that.
Week. Yeah. Right. Story-wise, it doesn't get you week to week. You can't have him fake being Randy Savage this week and next week have him fake being Mr. Perfect.
Too quick to go to a cage match between Riddle and Thatcher.
Yeah, I thought so. But like the Riddle Thatcher thing, I mean, I thought that they've been hotshotting this whole thing. Everything too quick has been the running critique of this. They're just rushing through some of these storylines. Like, what will Thatcher do post this?
Thatcher is joining Imperium.
Yeah,
on Wednesday, because they don't have access to Walter, so they need a
leader. Oh, okay.
I think that's right. What's going to happen here.
That does make some sense.
Because Walter can't come back from Europe, and who knows when that travel's going to happen. They're gonna make Thatcher the leader of Imperium, I think, in the meantime. And then finally, this Io Shirai Rhea Ripley match, built on Rhea Ripley basically telling Io Shirai to shut up. But it was a fun little match while it lasted. But again, we go into the we
you
have
can't
to build
buy the into the match.
Yeah.
Yeah, you couldn't buy into the stakes of the match. You knew something was going to happen when you just look at the clock in your house. Like, there's no way that they're finishing out this story. And then in comes Charlotte Flair, and you know this was goofy. Was it as goofy? Let me ask you this: compared to the finish of AEW this week, where we're doing the little fight in the football field, which was goofier?
Ooh.
Because I thought the finish to AEW this week was goofy too. Like for maybe half the time it was on, but like the final several minutes of that, like the final like 4 or 5 minutes.
Like here's the spot where we jump off the stadium wall, yeah, and stuff like right. That.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just because WWE always feels more contrived to me. So, I mean, it's weird. I think it's more or less a tie.
More contrived than here's where we jump off the stadium walls.
No, you're right. But I mean, they're different kinds of cutesy. We're building for this big spot to do, like the theme park stunt show. And this one,
a little bit of that would have been fine. But yeah, like a smidge of that, and we're going off the air. Shivani's like, oh, we're out of time. That's all we got. We'll see you at the Peru. And one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Funny.
I preferred the NXT one, I think, overall, though. I mean, sure. it, but not by much. They were both kind of pretty bad, I thought.
Yeah, for sure.
So we'll be watching at least sometime this weekend, probably Double or Nothing. Toru Yano's birthday party in New Japan, 3 a.m. on Monday. I may have to wake up for that because they will not be archiving that on the New Japan site. That's what they're saying. They're saying you have to watch that thing live.
That's ridiculous.
And I'm like, someone needs to wake up for me and tape that because I am all about that. We are all about the Toru Yano here on Shake Them Ropes. But
Miz and Morrison having to do a 2-on-1 match against Braun Strowman is everything bad about WWE booking. I will say this. This week, in the setup to that Miz versus Braun Strowman match, Miz and Morrison were very funny and had very good comedy chemistry.
They were funny after they got past the poop fart jokes.
Yes, right. When it was just when they were actually just doing basic character work.
Yes, when Miz had to turn
confident friend saying my friend can totally kick your ass, and Miz is like, oh, not so sure about that.
Yeah, when Miz is like playing, that's good. Yeah, when Miz is playing straight man and going, no, don't stop, no, and just the defeated. Oh man, whatever it was, it's like you got yourself a match. Oh, come on.
yeah.
Whatever that but reaction was, it was so that, natural.
No, it was natural. Morrison was very funny in that too, and like that was a real step in the right direction. And then it was like, oh yeah, well, we're gonna have a 2-on-1 match against you, and like whatever intrigue you put into this Miz and Morrison team now, it's gone. Or they're going to beat Braun Strowman and be half champions.
I think they, you know what would be perfect though? And I was thinking about this. If they beat Braun by chicanery and their only chance for like 20 seconds because Otis comes in and cashes in on them.
Oh, that would make sense. You could have them be the half champion and then Otis cashes in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe they're celebrating. Braun destroys them. Otis cashes in. Otis is the champ for, you know, 2 or 3 months.
Okay. And Braun turns heel. Otis beats Braun in the first match.
Okay. He could do that, I guess.
Because Braun's going to want his title back. I mean, after Braun loses with the briefcase and everything.
No, Braun just wants to entertain people, Chris. He's not interested in titles and money. He's just here to put smiles on people's faces.
But he knows what Otis is up to. He's been Money in the Bank briefcase holder. So, I mean, you know, you're talking to a veteran here.
Oh, rest in peace, Larry. You can follow me at Crab Game 13. You can follow Chris at Chris Novembrino. You can follow the show, just the show, at Shake Them Ropes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting family, including the flagship with Joe Lanza and Rich Kraich. Open the Voice Gate, Wrestling Omakase, the 5-star wrestling quiz show. I think there's another quiz show we put on there. Everything Elite, Music of the Mat with our friend Andrew Rich, who does a great job there. Just dropped another episode this week. We have a whole plethora of wrestling podcasts, but out of the two of us, the only one who doesn't do I can't word this. Chris doesn't do all wrestling podcasts. He has other interests like a well-rounded person should. He's going to plug his interests now.
You told me a few years ago that I needed to diversify my interests, and one thing I will say
is that. Did I tell you that?
You did. We had a conversation we were fighting, and you got mad at me, and you told me that I needed to have more interests and more hobbies or whatever. And you were totally right. I actually needed to do so. It's like I'm into cooking and stuff, and Deep Space Nine, which you hate me for now, but I like other things. No, you hate it. You hate me for it. It's the worst, and it hurts my feelings. But I'm okay. But I do these other podcasts too.
Your interest in cats is what disturbs me more than anything.
No, these cats are wonderful, especially little Yuffie. She's wonderful. Shadow just needs to stop eating wires because it costs me money. And it's sad. He's not eating them and ingesting them, but he just chews through stuff and it's bad. And I wish he wouldn't do that. Podcasts at DWATG. Don't worry about the government. Patreon.com/DWATG. We just recently had a debate. Who is the bigger joke, the Libertarian Party or the Green Party? Stuff has developed since then. We may rerun it and people will switch sides. Like a debate so nice, we might have it twice. So you'll have to at least listen to the first one before you hear the rematch. Go and check that out at don'tworry.tv. My other show, the All in the Family podcast, available archivally. We'll be doing more episodes sporadically here, but it is what it is. We're coming in and out, get the band back together. We haven't fully broken up, but, you know, we're not putting out stuff as much as we used to. But you know, everything's cool. We're just doing other things, working on other projects. AllInTheFamilyPodcast.com is where that hangs out. You can also find that on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm at Chris. CHRISNOVEMBRINO. Rest in peace, Larry.
There's some peace, Larry.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.